Most weight loss programs are short-term fixes, but managing your weight needs a long-term solution. And that's what makes Noom different. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
Before we get started with this episode of Bench with Bubba, a couple things to talk to you about. First, Rotoballer.com, proud sponsor of the show. Great products over there, premium products, premium tools, premium Slack chat, articles, a lot of free articles as well, a lot of great stuff over there. You know, I write a lot of DFS content at Rotoballer.com for baseball and football. We have a lot of season-long content for baseball coming up, even as the season winds on down. So go over to Rotoballer.com, join the premium package, use promo code Bubba for 10% off the package of your choice. Also, if you are into fantasy sports, which you obviously are if you're listening to the show, and you love the strategy of season-long fantasy sports, and you live for the short-term gratification at DFS, then you have to try it out. You have to try out Owner's Box, everybody. It's a weekly fantasy sports game on Owner's Box, WFS. Not DFS, WFS, weekly fantasy sports. Head on over to rollerballer.com/box and sign up today. Weekly Fantasy Sports is the best of daily and season-long. It keeps you engaged throughout live drafting and new multi-week games. Owner Box will be playing out users who bring their friends on board. Watch the real money rewards pile up through their first-ever three-tiered referral system. Add friends, create groups, and rank up to elevate the trash talk and competition to the next level. So basically, you sign up. You come play at Owner's Box. Use rotoballer.com/box to sign up. Then you bring your friends in. And you get a little kickback for that. You have your own leagues, weekly leagues, talk all the trash, have all the fun. Hey, but that's not it. In honor of the NFL season going forward, Owner's Box will be matching your first-time deposit up to $50 when you head on over to rollerballer.com/box and sign up today to claim your rewards and join the new wave of weekly fantasy sports, a WFS for all you lovers of fantasy sports. Weekly fantasy sports, Owner's Box, rotoballer.com/box for a $50 deposit bonus. Now, to this new episode of Benched with Bubba. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 314. Got a recurring guest for the show here to talk some 2021 fantasy baseball, some two early mock drafts, and so much more. He gets to retell his story of why he's called Sleepy K. So much great stuff. You can find him on Twitter at Mike_Corlin. Mike, how we doing, man?
Fantastic, dude. Just living the life.
Just living life. You sound a little down in the dumps right now. Are you okay?
No, because I look at the hair. See, it's like it's I put the hat on before the show, and I was like, no, they lost. They don't deserve the hat today, or losing, or I just stopped watching. It's the top of the eighth. Don't get me wrong; it's baseball. Four runs isn't the end of the world, but the Marlins put up five, and if any day they put up five and the pitching doesn't hold it down, I don't get my hopes up.
Yeah, so, ask Chris Woodward. The game's already over, so we're good.
Yeah.
No, there's always hope. There's always hope. Cooper, Aguilar, you never know. And it's only one game. You got six, though, tomorrow. So you're good.
Yeah, but it's Alcantara, man. It's like one of our – don't get me wrong. The pitching is actually halfway deep with Alcantara's why am I thinking Pablo Sandoval? I thought of Pablo Sandoval for whatever reason. Maybe it's because I'm here with you. Yep. But we have Sixto, and it's like we have the pitching. So we have, like, and we have, if we can put up five runs, most days I would be like, five runs is good for us. but the Braves can smack. So anyway, we're already off on a tangent. So
there's going to be many of those today. So people that want a regimented podcast, this might not be the one for you, but there'll be a lot of good information. So I promise you that. Were you actually watching the game? Because I was just watching it on my app. So were you watching it live?
For a little bit, and then I
– because I have a question, because I was watching, and Alcantara was striking guys out, doing great. It seemed like when he had that bad inning and even some other moments in the game, he still had two strikes on everybody. Was he just getting unlucky, or what was going on with that?
I honestly maybe should pay closer attention because I think I was getting frustrated because it was like – you're right. It was just a bad inning, and maybe the nerves got the best of him. He just couldn't follow through, finish off. That's kind of what I was thinking. It is the playoffs, like it or not. I mean, the last series is the last series. I feel like players are starting to feel it more, especially a young team like the Marlins. Don't get me wrong. The Braves are young too. But it's just, I don't know. I think the moment got to him probably because he settled back down. He had like the one rough inning, and that was it. He actually did well outside of that. So I'd expect, hopefully, and then tomorrow, like you said, 6-0, it's like, it's a big moment. Is he up for it?
Hey, he dealt last round. He looked great. So
I know. You're getting my hopes up. Stop it.
Because I'm rooting for it. Well, the bad thing is I like the Braves too. Mm-hmm. But I always like the underdog story. That's why I've been a Rays fan for so long, because you could see it coming. Now the Marlins are like, they're like one or two more years to kind of be in that little Rays story. Like they're close. Like they have so it's I kind of want to start jumping in now and enjoying the ride before everybody else joins you. That kind of thing.
So I'm hoping it's the case, but we'll see. Yeah, because you're right. It has a very Rays feel to it without being as good as the Rays.
Exactly. It's tough to do what they've done for so long. It's very tough. But let's talk to two early mocks. And I talked a little bit with Toby on Sunday, and the beautiful thing about mocks, there's been more picks. There's more ADP out there. We actually have like a set in stone couple first few rounds now, which will be good to talk about instead of just kind of guessing at things. But which league are you in right now?
Oh, man, I always forget the number. Is it 7 or 8? It's the one with I think we were one of the fast, like, we took off real fast and then we slowed down. I want to say 7. I always mix us up because it's it happened to be me and Clegg in one league and then my other two co-hosts in another league together. So we're both in one of the two. I want to say 7, though. That's my final answer.
Perfect. I'm in league 1, and we started out fast, and then I didn't make a pick at all yesterday, so that was fun.
That's kind of what we're getting to.
Yeah, I'm at the second pick, so I'm on the turn. I get it. It's going to be some long days, but yeah, no picks on a Monday, so that was good. But we're getting some interesting kind of goes at it here. Let's just kind of go over like the top so many picks, where everyone's kind of give our thoughts on it, if anything stands out or not, and then I'll just get your overall thoughts at the end. But you know, out the gate, it's a consensus 6 bats going before pitching. That's what we're seeing. Yeah, Betts, Acuna, Tatis, Trout's going 4th. He did not go first overall. So let's just stop there. Are you on the not Trout first pick overall anymore train?
Yeah, I actually am, and it blew my mind to say that, and it hurt my feelings. Like it really hurt. Like I've actually dropped my top 25 today, and I realized I put little asterisks next to Trout, and this is why.
You put 2 next to him.
Well, yeah, I said little. And the reason why is because the shallower the league, I think, really depends on his value. Like, will help his value or hurt his value. Because in a deeper, like this is a 15-team league that we're doing. NFBC style leagues are 15 teamers. My mindset has kind of traveled into that 15 team mindset now because that's a lot of what the leagues I do. So that's why when it comes to ranking players, I tell people I put them in tiers. I try to put them in tiers because depending on the league size will depend on their value. Like Albies, I'm really aggressive on Albies because his positional, where he's eligible for his position being second base and his skill set, the pairing is very rare. Especially considering, again, going back to a 15-team league, second base with 5 category, maybe 4.5 because RBIs aren't really his thing, especially if that's the bottom lineup. But you're getting stolen bases, you're getting a little pop, you're getting some batting average. That skill set at that position makes him more valuable to me, and I've already valued him kind of high. So I'm really aggressive on all of these. But in a 12-team league or shallower, maybe that positional flexibility, positional eligibility isn't as important. Steals are easier to come by later, like in the second and third round, whereas in the first and second, they're kind of dried up. In a 15, so that goes back to Trout being top 6 or here 4. He keeps moving farther down my ranks in these deeper formats because the stolen bases are an uncertainty, which is weird to say because if you look at his metrics, the sprint speed's still 94th percentile. He's still running as fast. He did fall a little bit, but how much of that little fall is it because he didn't attempt any? So it's kind of skewing the numbers a little bit. But we're talking a very, very like his sprint speed, like feet per second, were like in line with 2016 or 2017. So it was pretty much right when he was running, it was the same. But I don't know, because the intent wasn't there this year. But then you have other teams that were out of it, like the Nationals, that Soto still ran plenty, and Soto doesn't even have that in a skill set. It's more of a skill. Actually, I lied. It's more of a skill set thing than a natural tools thing for Soto. Like, he's good at stolen bases, but there's nothing there. He actually was slower this year. So it was really weird. Like, but like that's where I'm at. It's like either Soto, and they go back to back, like you mentioned. But I still have Trout above Soto, but I have Turner as high as second or third, I think, in my rankings.
I'm glad you said that, because I took Turner number two. I went with him there because, a couple things. A, it's a mock draft, so I want to see what my team looks like with Turner, because I've been preaching Turner needs to be a top 3-4 pick the last couple of years. I really believe he is a 5-tool player. I believe he has 20-plus home run power, and he showed this year he could be like a 25, 40, or 50 stolen base guy, like if things all click, which is insane. It's absolutely nuts. It stinks because I'm a big Acuna guy, so passing on Acuna was tough for me. But I think it, with shortstop, it's like a discussion I've had lately. It's very, very deep, but it seems like even if you didn't get one of the top guys, you weren't as happy as, or your team wasn't as successful as it could have been. Like, you still want one of the top guys, the Tatises, the Turners, the Stories. One of those, like, Story had a monster season. He's still kind of going lower than I think people realize in these drafts. But I'm glad you had Turner, too. That's really interesting. I'm out on the Trout class as well, just because – the steals are so big. You got Betts runs, Acuna runs, Soto runs now, apparently, which is interesting, and Turner runs. Trout's gone as low as 8 or 9 in these mock drafts, which is, there's 9 total mock drafts going on. So do you have anything else on these first 6 hitters that kind of stands out to you?
No, just that Turner's a little lower than I'd like. I don't know. I'm like I value him similarly to you, and there's an argument he could be first overall because there is a floor there too. But I think Turner's injury history is enough. Like, and always little knickknack things, a broken pinky or whatever it was, or an index finger when he tried to bunt. Was it 2 years ago now?
2 years. Wow, yeah.
Really? It all meshes together. But my point is, and then you obviously with speedsters, you get that little knickknack, like soft tissue stuff. But I get it. I think we're kind of overlooking that because we know the ceiling's there. But and they're still a little safer floor than most runners. But other than that, I mean, that's kind of the only thing is this is the first year I feel like, wow, Mike Trout really isn't in a tier of his own. I think this is one big tier, though. I do value you take any one of these 6 players, you aren't losing your league because of it. That's how I look at it.
100%. Like, go get your guy. And you made a good point on the 12-team thing is I think a lot when I draft 12-team leagues because there's so much more replacement value, I could say, or depth, as you're saying. I go more of get what I want. I'm not worried about making sure I have, you know, like you said, make sure he has steals or this kind of stuff. I'm not as focused on. So, yeah, Trout does have more value there. You don't really need to go as pitcher heavy if you want, or you can go super pitcher heavy and try to dominate it. There's lots of ways to go about it, but I'm with you there. When you go out of the top 6, though, it gets interesting now. You got DeGrom. He's gone as high as 1 and as low as 12. You got J-Ram, Bieber, who there's been a lot of debates, but I think this kind of settled. He's kind of locked into that 2-3. Story and Cole. Cole's gone a little higher. He's gone as high as 4, as low as 15. So there's some interesting ranges there. So let's just stop there before we get to some names that are standing out quite a bit. But you got J-Ram and Story in the mix there. But the main part of the question here is you got DeGrom, Bieber, and Cole. Where do you stand on those 3?
Okay, so up until recently, I actually had DeGrom 1, Cole 2, Bieber 3. That is my top 3. And that honestly should be the consensus top 3 right now. Bieber did well enough, even though he had the easiest schedule of the 3. He did well enough, and he dominated like he was supposed to a point where it's like, because, you know, people are like, well, he had an easy schedule. But he dominated beyond, like, what he was supposed to do against, like, so the fact that he dominated as much as he did against that easy schedule shows that it wasn't a fluke, because I always look at it like, he did what he was supposed to do against teams that whatever. I'm rambling. I think I'm repeating myself at this point. Anyway, my point is those Bieber still only did for such a short period. Although I like what I saw, I still think he's the 3rd here. It's DeGrom and Cole where I'm going back to why I'm like so torn. I have to factor in wins. I think DeGrom's the better pitcher, but we have another year of him getting older. We have that another year of the Mets probably going to be the Mets, even though I do trust in, was it Steve Cohen or whatever his name is, to
new owner.
I do trust the new owner to try and make them more competitive. So hopefully he goes out and maybe buys a new bullpen. But even then, it takes time for a team to mesh and all that. And then you have Gerrit Cole, who's on the Yankees, who has the best, like one of the best bullpens. And the winnability there, that's the thing you can't argue or ignore. And then you have, you know, you have to remember that division isn't the hardest either over there in terms of the offenses. So Cole might have became my number 1 because you have to chase wins. And I hate wins. I think they're a stupid category in real life. But for fantasy, that's 20% of your again, 5x5 is 20% of what matters, and Gerrit Cole probably has the most winnability of all these, especially if the Indians go out and start selling pieces like Lindor, Brad Hand. Their bullpen's already kind of shaky. I mean, Krinchak is solid, but you just never know. I feel like the Indians are – and then their offense never really shows up like it's supposed to. So, I don't know. I'm kind of going Cole, DeGrom, Bieber personally.
That's what I have. I had that going into this year. Or I didn't have Bieber. I had Cole over DeGrom. I had Bieber like fifth or sixth. I'm good with Bieber being third. I had no problem with that at all. But it's Cole over DeGrom for me. You mentioned you hate wins, and wins shouldn't be a stat. What would you replace them with?
I would say quality start, but then you're right. Like that, even that's even like not happening.
Those are getting crazier and crazier to find out too.
I hate them as a stat to judge a player off of, but I understand the necessity for them. Does that make sense? Like I hate the stat. Yeah. I think it's a stupid stat because wins are a team thing.
I believe it was MLB Moving Average. He's talked about on many shows, but he was on my show, and he created like the different versions of quality starts.
Yeah.
And I think there's a good angle to use those over the current one. Now getting those to incorporate into all these leagues is gonna be next one possible. But I think that's an interesting way to go about it, where you have to go like 7 innings, give up, you know, 3 runs, 6 innings, give up 2 runs. Those kind of quality starts I think are a little more justifiable to me.
Yeah, and if you can go 5 innings of no run or 1 run ball, why is that not a quality start? So yeah, exactly. That now if there was a sliding scale quality start type of thing, that's pretty much what you would be creating / inventing for fantasy, which would actually be welcomed in today's sabermetrically, like how we are so into those numbers. That I feel like that would be most people would welcome that than wouldn't, I believe. And if they wouldn't, I think they'd get used to it relatively quickly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's like the universal DH. You get used to it.
Yeah. Well, I like the universal DH.
I've embraced it.
I know a lot of people don't or were apprehensive. I think it's good for baseball because other I know we won't get any Bartolo Colon moments anymore, which those are fantastic. But I mean, all I think about is who was it that tore their Achilles when they came out of the batter's box a couple years ago?
Well, I know Tanaka's injured himself. There's been a few others running the bases. It's been a disaster. So
Jimmy Nelson. Thank you, because he's also he's the same one who hurt his shoulder when he dove back into the bag.
Yep.
And now it derailed his career. He was having the breakout, and then has never been the same since that shoulder.
So then you have the Hardo crowd, and that just tells you, well, pitchers must not be athletes then.
Oh, I'm crap! whoa! Wait a minute.
I'm kidding.
Kickers aren't athletes. I'm kidding.
Yeah.
Kickers actually. I mean,
punters are people too.
Yeah.
Let's go to the next couple guys that I kind of I left them in their own little bracket here because there's good explanation that they're down here because obviously players that play well need to move up the draft board. But if you get Christian Yelich 12, Bellinger 13, Freeman 14, Lindor 15, and I'll throw Harper in there at 16 because I think Harper's going to kind of move up and down too. So you get Yelich, Bellinger, Freeman, Lindor, Harper at the back end of round one. Would you be happy with that leaving round one?
Oh, of course. I mean, I want to that's why going in the back end of the draft is actually preferable. And if this ADP is any indication, which it won't stick because we all know how pitching is going to get pushed up. But if you can pick 11th on average and get a Gerrit Cole or a Shane Bieber, because I think one of those three might fall there, you turn around and get one of those guys you just mentioned on the back end. Now you're starting off, maybe not, it's not 15 teamer. I forget. You won't, but in a 12 teamer, it's definitely preferable. In a 12 teamer, give me that all day. But in 15, I'm not big on going pitching in the first two rounds. I'm one of those anti-pocket aces. And honestly, who am I to argue with pocket aces? Because Toby's very successful doing it. Mm-hmm. But it's not my style. And I don't know why. Maybe it's because I have an affinity for hitters because we all know it's all I talk about. Like, I don't do pitching breakdowns anymore. It's strictly hitting. But anyway, I would love this. I would love this. Give me two of those guys to start my draft any day of the week. And I feel like you have a huge upper hand on offense.
Yeah, you know, first base is such a top-heavy position that it drops off really quick. Like, if you can go Yelich and Freeman or Bellinger and Freeman or, you know, Freeman and Harper or something, that is one heck of a way to start your draft in a big, big way. Because especially, like you said, in 12 teams, the pitching depth's insane. Like, that's one thing I've learned in this mock draft so far is, yes, the aces, the elites are up there kind of in their own tier. But, man, if you like that glob after the top, you know, 7-8 pitchers – there is a lot of pitching to choose from. I'm learning that real quick. And that starts after Harper. You have Trevor Bauer, and you got Machado, then Yu Darvish, Bichette, Giolito, Arenado, Scherzer, Nola, Castillo, Walker. Then you have Albies, Bogarts, Kershaw, Rendon. So you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 pitchers going ADP round 2 right now. That is saying quite a bit.
And you're going to see that move up. If there's one injury or one little, like someone's missing part of camp, you're going to see one guy jump into the first round, maybe two jump into that back end of the first round. If Bauer actually gets his way and gets the throw before inning or every four games, he's going to be a first rounder, arguably the first overall pick because of the volume difference. So stuff like that, there's still going to be change. So the fact that we've already seen such a big push for pitching, we're going to see more. Flaherty is going to creep back into the second round. There's no way he stays out of the second round. I don't see how. I think people are going to – how can you – like people were so big on him based off a half a season, and now because of what would arguably be a half a season again of
– He had coverage for crying out loud. Like, yeah, he restretched out.
That's what I'm saying. People forget – it's like people want to forget that or something. So I went from being anti-Flaherty to loving his value right now. Give me Flaherty as my ace in the third round all day. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, that's why it's gonna be interesting seeing how this plays out, because he's like he goes anywhere from 27 to 58. It's crazy. And 27 was in my league, because in my league, 10 starting pitchers went in the second round.
Yeah, I actually got him in my league late third. Let me look at
the 35th pick. So you must be in league 8.
Is that where I'm at? See, I'm glad you know. I have no idea. Well,
35th went in league 8. 40th was league. So it could have been 40th. That's late round 3.
I got him 40th.
So you're around. So you're league 7.
Yeah, I told you I was league 7. I thought so.
See, yeah, you thought so. Yeah. You got it.
But yeah, 40th. I got him. Really, what I thought was really great value. And again, he was my ace because I went hitter. And I was like, wow, if that's the case, I'll go hitter every time. Because then my two pitchers, I forgot who's my other one. We'll get to it eventually. But I got my team right here. But yeah, it's like, oh yeah, I paired him with Blake Snell, which I will talk about that because I realize I'm not a fan of him in 15 teamers. But anyway.
He's a tricky one. One of these pitchers that goes in round 2, it was kind of a fun discussion on Twitter yesterday on Monday, so I want to kind of get your thoughts on this. Walker Buehler, he's going to pick 29.1, 26 player off the board, depends on how you look at their ADP, as high as 19, as low as 41. So there's a lot of people mixed on him, obviously. Slow start to the year, had a blister, all these different things. So really didn't have much of a 2020 season. So some are saying his innings will be shut down. He's only like a year removed from 180 innings, so I'm not like totally disowning this. Are you worried that he's not going to be back to his ace like innings counts, or do you think he'll be good to go?
I think he's going to get a little bit of that Dodger-itis. I really do think that's going to happen. I think they're going to play that. I don't know. We're all expecting them to compete for the World Series. That postseason run can be helpful this year.
Yep.
So if they make it to the World Series, which, again, I think this is going to be a really good series between them and the Padres, but if they make it to the World Series, I don't think we're going to be as concerned about Walker Buehler. Plus, I do believe teams have probably talked about it. Some players are probably more proactive about it than others, but I bet you players are still pitching on a regiment right now. Yep. Players are staying stretched out. Players came in stretched out.
Yep.
People forget that. Like, you might not – sure, they might not pitch 6 innings right out the gate, but pitchers rarely do, it seems like, these days. So I think – the inning stuff might be overblown.
Mm-hmm. I'm 100% with you. That's kind of been my point of my discussion on this, because a lot of people are in the concerned camp. The guys I'm concerned with, and we're going to talk about these guys after we do two early mocks, but like the Lizardos, the Burns, the guys that have not done it before. But pitchers that have thrown the innings before, they know how to ramp up properly. They have been ramping up. Guys were throwing while they were negotiating the season. They might not have been throwing hard, but they are staying loose and ready. I wouldn't be shocked if guys are throwing now. Like you said, there's some teams that have tried to get a bunch of players to play in winter ball. Like, they're trying to get them just to get their innings counts up. Like, there's a program in play. So maybe he doesn't go 200 innings, but say Walker Buehler throws 160 to 170 innings. Is that good enough for you in the back end of round 2?
Yeah, I'm okay with that, because I'm looking at it like quality over quantity. And there's players going later. This goes back to roster construction now. Because I think Walker Buehler is going to be an ace. It's just a matter of how many innings he pitches. You're right, because I do think the Dodgers are going to manage and monitor all their guys, especially Kershaw getting another year older. I think even Kershaw, he's going right after Buehler, so I think he's another guy that, although I feel more comfortable about his innings, people forget that he started off the year like hurt again. Yep. So like that injury concern is there anyway, so I think he's going to be limited as well. Regardless, you take a Walker Buehler, if you pair him with if you want to be aggressive, maybe a Lance Lynn falls to you in the third, or – I'm looking at other guys. Maybe like I feel like Sonny Gray is oddly like I'm comfortable taking him as like somebody who I expect to get innings out of, or even a Kenta Maeda, stuff like that. Brandon Woodruff. It's all about pairing him with somebody safe. Maybe a Berrios falls too. I got Berrios really late in our draft. And Barrios can be a good SP3 to back up the first two guys you get, because you know Barrios is getting those innings, and innings eaters are going to gain value again next year. Kyle Hendricks, another guy. Like, it's all about who you pair Buehler with. So if you're a little apprehensive, think quality over quantity and pick up quantity later, because I think the skills are there and I think the talent is there.
I think that's a phenomenal way to phrase it. That was kind of my argument in February before COVID hit, is where I was arguing for Strasburg and Kershaw types, where we know they're probably going to end up on the IL at some point in time. But, you know, you look at a guy like Strasburg before this year where the big injury happened, he was still pitching about 140 to 160 innings, give or take, every season, and the ratios were great, the strikeout numbers were great. So you got quality when he was on the mound. Now you got to also factor in, okay, while he's on the IL, you're going to pick somebody up and throw him for replacement value. So you're still kind of tacking that onto your draft pick in theory. So you got to think about long term on this. You're still getting a darn good ball player. So just for passing on a guy just because you're worried about his innings, I get to an extent. I'm not saying it's wrong, but I think there's more to it than that. And that's where, like, you're talking about building the roster, the Barrioses, things like that, where, like, my SP3 in the mocks, I wanted to see how it turns out. I took Sixto Sanchez. We'll talk about that in a bit. If I had a Buehler type, if I didn't have the guys I had in line that I was confident as my starters, I probably wouldn't take a Sixto Sanchez. Like, that's just how you do things when you build your roster. So,
yeah, I took Barrios for the same reason. Well, again, you mentioned, we'll talk about it, but I took Barrios because I just mentioned I needed a rock. Yeah. And he fell to, like, pick 100, which is fair, because I remember last year, I think it was about the same price for him, actually. He was, like, that in that weird range of, like, he could fall anywhere. So I got him, like, again, we'll look it up, but he was just, like, he's a rock. And sometimes you just need those, because, like, I feel like I took some risk early on for my starters. And then I backed up him with McCullers. So, yeah, I have a bunch of question marks at SP, but, yeah.
Yeah, no, I get it. It makes a lot of sense. You mentioned Kershaw. Kershaw is, like, the pick 29-ish range. Max Scherzer's going around 26-7. Would you rather trust Scherzer or Kershaw in 2021?
That is a tough question, because I think they both have their risks at this point. I think Scherzer has the better stuff, but how do you doubt what you saw from Kershaw? Like, I feel like Kershaw somehow, even as a top 10 pitcher, feels like a value, because I feel like he's still, like, arguably one of the best in the game. So I don't know. But Scherzer, if he just – it's, is he going to stay healthy, though? I don't know. That's the problem. I think I'm going to go – wow, I think – am I going to go Kershaw over Scherzer? I don't know. I think I truly think it's your preference. It's all about your belief in how healthy they can be. I think they both come with risk. I'm going to go – you know what? Let's make that stupid stat. Wins matter. The Dodgers have the better team. Yeah. Go with Kershaw, because I think he gets more wins, honestly. And this is when wins matter. It's a tiebreaker. I use it as a tiebreaker. When I'm so torn, I'm like, I don't know which way to go. I look at, like, one stat that I hate the most. I'm like, oh, I guess let's look at wins. Oh, I as of right now, obviously, but it's always the Dodgers. They always compete. Let's see if Kershaw's velocity sustains again this year, though, because he gained that velocity coming into this year because he went the drive line. Let's see if he goes next offseason, comes back in the spring, and see if his velocity is still there, because if the velocity dips, then I'm going to probably drop him a little bit, because we saw the difference in – the 2019-2020 Kershaw with the velocity gains. So if we can get the velocity back and remaining somewhat, you know, where in line where it was this year, I think I'm going to put Kershaw ahead of Scherzer. Yeah.
Yeah. The velocity thing is the big thing, and that he was tremendous this year. So hopefully we get a real spring training. We'll have some info on that. That'll help us make some picks going forward there. Now, when we're heading to round three, I'm not going to read off all the players now, but some names I want to discuss here. And it can kind of intertwine with, you know, players that are hard to rank in 2021. So let's just start with Luis. It's Robert. That's what I've always said, and it finally came out the other day. That's how he actually says it. He said Robert because he wanted to make it easier for us dumb Americans. It's Robert. So with Lou Bob, that's what it always makes you. It's called Lou Bob.
But is it Lou Bob anymore if it's Robert?
Mike's on top of it. But that's very, very possible. It's Lou Ro. But he's going around pick 35 ADP-wise right now. He's gone as high as 16, which is a little too steep for me, and as low as 45. Where are you going on him? Because I believe the batting average could definitely improve from where it was this year. I think that's a given. But the power, the speed, everything he does, pretty darn legit.
I'm looking up this. I've recently tweeted about him because he's very polarizing. And
it's almost like if you like him, you have to go get him type thing.
At his max pick, I'm okay. I'm okay with him as a top 50 guy. The problem is I'm treating him like modesty until he shows me he has better plate discipline than Mondesi. Because although he has more, he has better raw skills, more raw talent, we're still looking at a very small sample in AAA, a very small sample in the MLB. And he also faced arguably the easiest pitching he's going to face ever in that division, in the super division he dealt with. He's not going to get the Pirates as much next year, if at all. He's not going to get – I mean, the Reds were good, but the bullpen wasn't that great this year. The Cubs' bullpen was terrible, and their starters are okay. But and then you're looking at Luis Robert. Among qualified hitters, which was like 140-something of them, he had the fourth worst O-swing, the eighth worst O-contact, the sixth worst Z-contact, third worst overall contact, and the worst swing strike rate in baseball. And a lot of people aren't analytically driven, so like honestly, I'll break it down. Basically, he swings at everything. He has a lot of swing and miss in his game, and he swings at a lot of strikes. Like, he misses a lot of balls in the zone as well. Like, balls thrown in the zone, he swings and misses. But when he connects, we literally saw him hit the second farthest home run of the year at like 487 feet. So we know the power is legit. We know the speed's real. But going back to Mondesi, I'm very anti-Mondesi. I think you are as well. I think a lot of us are very anti that plate discipline, that like, ooh, that profile is really scary. Mondesi, known for his plate discipline, ranks better in four of those five categories I just said than Robert. That concerns me. Do I think Robert long-term is going to be a question? No, I'm not there yet. Where I am concerned is that in 2021, because there wasn't enough time to grow through these pains in a shortened 2020.
No, that's valid. That's very valid. He's one of those guys I just feel like, you know, he's going to figure it out eventually. And once he does, you're never going to get him at this price. And that's when it gets interesting. Like, okay, when he figures it out, he's a first-round pick.
Yeah, but we said the same thing about Vlad, who has the better hit tool, who has the better, like, the overall bat. Right. And Vlad's, like, what, sixth, seventh-round pick still? Or now?
Which is a bit crazy to me, because I feel like he's really close. But, yeah, Lubob, it's going to be interesting to see where he goes. I'm going to have a feeling I'm not going to have him anywhere. It's going to be very tough. But you mentioned Mondesi. He's going right after him. Like, Robert is 34.9, Mondesi's 35.2. As high as pick 18, as low as pick 61. And this is a guy, like, his hit tool sucks, like you said. It's really, really bad. I'll make that real simple. You don't even look at numbers. It sucks.
It's the same thing. Like all those numbers I said for Robert, Mondesi was right there behind him. Like, it wasn't like Mondesi was, like, vastly better than him. He was just technically better than him. They were both, like, top five, top ten in most of these stats, which was absurd.
And this is where having, like, the no real press, no, you know, kind of – non-Zoom interviews where you can kind of get, like, intimate conversations with a player and get, like, secrets or anything like that. I want to know what Mondesi did for his September. Like, if you look at his September numbers, though, he had a crazy hard hit rate, an amazing barrel rate. Like, he did things that are great that we've seen when he – throughout his career in the minors or anything where he showed power, he showcased that for about 3.5 weeks, which is obviously not what you want for a six-month season. But it was something that I want to know. Did he change his approach to the plate? Did he – tweak something? I know there's a guy that I talk to a lot that does video comparisons. Maybe there's something there. But I'm just thinking that there's something that's interests me, because I hate rabbits. I don't like Billy Hamilton, those type of guys. But if Mondesi can showcase, you know, 15 home run power, hit 255 to 260, and still steal all those bases, he is extremely entertaining to me. And then all of a sudden, if he does hit it a little power and a little average like that, he's basically a Trey Turner light, like, 2 to 3 rounds later. Do you at least agree with that, or am I just crazy?
I'm not as optimistic as what it is. It's not that I don't agree with the potential, because obviously he flashes it. He literally won people leagues this year, because anybody drafted him or bought low on him, I probably started him for both home bases regardless, and the rest followed. Mm-hmm. And you're right. Maybe the shoulder finally got healthy. Maybe the shoulder wasn't right.
There's got to be something that just clicked, and all of a sudden he was a completely different player.
What date would you say he started? You just said just in general September. Let's look at September. I'm just going to look at September.
Like September 1st for fun. It was give or take. I remember I was writing them up a lot towards the end of the year for DFS, and it was somewhere along that line.
Well, because now I'm going to do it on the fly. I'm not going to look up the. You know, I like to look at my swing change and all that. Maybe he made a little tweak in his approach, but I'm just looking overall. The strikeout rate dropped about 3%, but it was the walk rate. He actually was far more patient. The walk rate jumped up almost about 5.7%. So that's huge. And that's huge for a player of his skill set, because if you get on base that much.
You gave him a free base to go steal bases. That's crazy.
Basically. And he stole 16. He did not steal 16.
In a month.
Bases in a month? Holy jeez. And yeah, it's crazy, because if you actually look at the first, you know, the first, what was it? I guess first month or 2 months, month and a half. He had 8 stolen bases, but got caught 5. Maybe his confidence as a whole was shot. Maybe he was just not – he was a shell of himself. Exit velocity, wow, jumped up. Average exit velocity jumped up six miles per hour.
Yep.
You mentioned he was barreling the ball better. So maybe a mixture of health and confidence happened. The BABIP was also 464. So take that for
what. If you're hitting at that hard, you're hitting on the ground, your BABIP goes higher.
That speed tool allows you to be a higher BABIP guy. Yep. This is the type of stuff I do for my deep dives. For those who are wondering, I start looking at every little nook and cranny, and he was pulling the ball a lot in this final thing. And he pulled his pull rate. Like, he might have had a little bit of approach change because his pull rate went up 11.4% too.
That's quite the jump.
And his ground ball rate dropped 5% as well, with all of it going to his fly ball rate. And he stopped popping up the ball, so he was actually, again, it goes back to that better quality of contact. Mm-hmm. He was his infield fly ball rate dropped 12%, 12.5%. Jeez. Yeah. So again, I know. Okay, we can do this all day because I sit here and go like bit by bit into him. But
I think it's interesting because Mondesi is going to be talked about a lot this offseason.
Well, now you gave me something to do. Like, now I have to go looking no more because I don't understand.
Yeah, because he was on my list to look at more because I just looked at him briefly enough to kind of tell you what I know from DFS, because I was trying to justify, was he worth playing every day? And you look at everything he's doing and the increase in quality of contact, that's a big plus for me, especially in DFS where, you know, if he starts slumping after 2 or 3 days, he can just jump ship. You don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
But I'm watching that, I'm looking, and I go, okay, I expand it to another week and another week. I'm like, he's been doing this for a little while now, and it's like looking pretty good. So I'm curious.
The only thing about him is like his swing strike rate. Like,
he's still never bad.
Terrible. It was 19.9 before, 20.3 after. It's like legitimately, like, I think it's like bottom three in the league. So I don't think that, but he was just more patient. So what's concerning is that he was more patient and he stuck things more. Swinging and missing roughly the same. So that isn't sustainable. But he did chase less, which again, it makes sense. You swing less, you chase less, you walk more. And he had almost a league average walk rate. And for him, a league average walk rate or even slightly under is a huge, huge help to what his skill set, which again, it turns it like a walk turns into a double.
Yep.
9 times out of 10, roughly.
Yeah. I have no problem if he hits 230, if his on base is like 340 because he's walking. That's totally, I'll take you all day. I know average is a category, but again, you think wins are dumb? I think average is dumb. Give me OBP.
I think that's viable.
No, yes. So we'll see.
We agree wholeheartedly. But the problem is, let's be honest, his OBP might be 300 for lucky.
Yes.
Although we'll see though, because was this a flash in the pan? Can I go back? I'm gonna go back and look at his 2019 month by month. I guarantee you there was a month where he had similar numbers. Yeah. That's the thing. So it could just be one of those volatile profiles.
And since I'm kind of lazy and you like to do your deep dives, also look back to, I believe it was 2018 or whenever he was called up and he had a monster second half to help people win titles. Look at what he did there too.
Probably identical. I got you. I can spend the next 20 minutes looking at Mondesi because he really is super polarizing, and I will forever, like, just like Javi Baez, I will forever be fading these guys because when you have people with such a volatile plate discipline, it's like one out of every 10 really do what Mondesi does. But Mondesi has an above average skill with his speed that helps him defy some of these other numbers where a lot of guys with these numbers can't do. So I know Robert is kind of in that category of having that elite speed, but he also has elite power.
Yes.
So you mix the two together, the tools are there. I'm banking on it being 2022, and I'm willing to be wrong in 2021 is pretty much what I'm getting. I'm willing to be wrong on Robert. Jeez. And I'm half Cuban. I should be better at this.
I want to mention something. Don't look these guys up right now, but just make a mental note or write it down or whatever. You mentioned Javi Baez. Look up Baez and Gleyber Torres, because I've done this on a few pods and some other things. They got way less aggressive this year, and I think that hurt them. So
yeah, I saw Torres. Torres's walk rate flew up last I looked, or something like that.
Yeah, they were. But like, you look at their zone and then their chase rates, they were more effective hitting the baseball when they were chasing more, if that makes sense, because they were expanding the zone. And they didn't do that, and things changed. So,
and some hitters, like a guy like Javi, some hitters like
aggressive. They need to be aggressive.
He's always been that way. But yeah, that's interesting. You're right. I won't look him up now because that'll put another 15-minute tangent. But Mondesi is so polarizing. I think people are going to honestly listen to that part and be kind of probably just as torn as ever, because I'm still just as torn as ever. But I think it's still worth noting and talking about. But anyway, we can move on. I apologize.
No, it's fine. I think the last thing I'll say on Mondesi for now, because I know I'll probably talk about him on almost every show I do until next season starts. Because I'm infatuated with the different angles to it, is I think Mondesi is a very good pick if you have a league with an overall title, like the main event, because he has that ceiling that could just skyrocket you. But say you're in a 12 or 15 team mono league, or just no overall, just that league alone, where you want to play a little safer, maybe you don't go to a Mondesi. So,
or what if you get Trout and Rendon as your first two picks, and you're going hitter heavy? You go Trout, Rendon, Mondesi.
That works like a Juan Soto, who you know is average, is through the roof. Like,
and that's why I said Rendon, because Rendon falls in that second round area. Maybe Bregman falls there. You trust their average, even though I don't trust Bregman's average as much as Rendon's. But you still, my point is, though, you get like those types of guys, the high floor. You set yourself up good, and Mondesi is going to be there in the third round more than likely. And you try to – you're zigging everyone's zags. Pitching's getting pushed up. I'm going to have a couple teams where I'm going to try zigging, going heavy hitter, and then hit the middle tier pitchers on the off, because, you know, you're more likely to find that next – the idea is to find the next breakout, the next Bieber, the next Plesac or whatever. It's going to be in that range of, like, 25 to 40. Like, somewhere in there you usually find them. So I know I'm going to try at least one league where it's, like, hitter, then maybe go SP my next three or something like that. But that's the type of league where I would set myself up with such a high floor that I could take on a Mondesi – that who could bury you, who did bury you for a month and a half prior to breaking out in September. And but the problem is if he's so bad again, does he get benched again? Does he move down the lineup again?
It's a gamble. It's a massive gamble.
But it's fun. That's what makes fantasy fun. That's why I love baseball.
Yep, it's great. It's such a long season. You gotta be willing to wear it out. But let's talk Jose Abreu real quick, because he's going around pick 37.3. It's a guy I've always been a fan of. He's like Mr. Consistency. If you look at the back of his baseball card, he exceeded that consistency this year, obviously, in the shortened season. And a guy that barely cracked the top 10 at first baseman in most drafts when it came to ADP, now he's flying off the board in the third round, which is something we never see with Abreu. He went as high as pick 19, which I just don't understand that, as low as pick 57. I actually thought he might end up going even lower. Maybe in March he will, because I just could see people now saying he's old and all this stuff. But he's on a great team. The hit tool's legit. Like, he could be the next Nelson Cruz in my mind. Obviously not 40 home run power, but could have that consistency at the dish, like a 280 hitter hitting 25 to 30 homers in the middle of that lineup. That's going to be good for a while. Do you take Abreu this early, or is this too rich for your blood?
This is a little too rich for my blood, and it's because but the first base is bad. Like, I thought second base was bad. First base is bad, but this is the year I'm going to probably switch up my feelings and be like, just go after Pete Alonso. Because now you're getting Pete Alonso where you should have been drafted last year.
No, don't leave us. But here, okay, well, how about this? Here's a different one. Here's a different one. Because this is a guy at least can hit for average, if Pete Alonso can't. Jose Abreu here at 37. Let me scroll, because I did it in a 12-team. I'm in a 12-team and a 15. So so you got Jose Abreu around pick 35. Or you can go around pick 75 and get Paul Goldschmidt.
Well, there you go. Perfect. I don't know. But see, what scares me about Goldschmidt, I'm not a Goldschmidt guy, and he's been steadily declining for like 6 years now. Like, it's been like one of the weirdest things. It's almost like Miggy, where it's just like a little less every year. So maybe not Goldschmidt, but where's Matt Olson going?
He's going two picks before Goldschmidt.
I'll take another shot on Olson. I'm not off that Olson train. I'm with you. What he needs to do is honestly just start laying down bunts down the third base line, dude. You see the shifts that the problem is like all this, like, this is where StatCast fools you. StatCast says he's like 1,000 times better than he is, and he is. But the problem is he's so pull happy, and pitchers are actually pitching him to pull the ball that they're just shifting him. And he's one of those that are getting really heavily affected by the shifts. The power's real, and everything else is like the tools are there, but man, he needs to start putting the ball the opposite way a little bit. Otherwise, he's going to forever be like, Cyrus Davis, that's
what he's going to turn into. That'd be terrifying.
You know what I mean? Like,
you're right. No, you're right. He'll be Adam Dunn.
Yeah, so that's why it's like, but I'm willing to give Olson a discount, a shot as my first baseman, because, you're getting Olson in that 75 range, and I think that's fair. I think that price is fair. I think Pete Alonso should be around there too. So I realize Alonso is up higher because of his min pick of 28, which is absurd. Because he's shown nothing. If you go in his troubles, people are like, "Well, it was a shortened season." Go back to the second half of 2019. That's where it started. It started the strikeouts increased, the batting average decreased. I don't buy it, but the power, it's weird though, because his power metrics aren't even through the roof. But it's because he has enough power and he barrels the ball very well. Is why the power is always going to play and be a plus thing for him. So I can understand, but then I'm looking at guys like I know Aaron Judge has his health problems, but I'd rather have Aaron Judge, George Springer, Brandon Lau. These are all names going after Pete Alonso I'd rather have above him still. And then Nelson Cruz, his health is getting that point, but I still think I'd rather give Cruz a shot. And then that's why I think Pilon's start belongs right here with Matt Olson and Ketel Marte, which I love both of them, by the way. And I've drafted both of them in my league.
I'm glad you mentioned Ketel Marte, because that's a dude that's just – like, there's a handful of guys I think are falling too much because of the shorts. Like, there's overreactions on both ends of the spectrum. Like, Luke Voit got moved up to 46. Like, he's been great. Like, don't get me wrong, but that is one heck of a jump up there. Yeah, Ketel Marte, who's fallen quite a bit. You have a bunch of other guys that you can take a look at. So that's going to be the differentiating factor. Basically, how much are you using 2020 to your 2021?
It's tough, and there's no right answer. There's people that are really smart. Like, I think it was Phil, what's his last name, that plays in all those main events. He's very, very smart dude. So I respect a lot of things he says. And he was saying that basically you look at the numbers, if you're looking at projections, you look at the numbers, 33% of them. But if you're looking at like a deeper look, like analytics, 50 to 60% apparently. So it's that cascade that does matter pretty much. So
when you turn the microwave on, you get 60%. When you turn it off, you get 30%.
Yeah, oh man. basically is what I'm understanding. But then again, the waves from microwave might be messing with my brain. I don't know what's going on. Yeah,
true, true. Maybe we need an air fryer. That might be the trick.
Or some tinfoil, like a tinfoil
hat. Okay, tinfoil hat. There we go.
But I was just looking at the thing about Marte is I wanted to look, and he played second base a lot. I wasn't sure because I know he played the outfield, bounced around a little bit. But I guess my point is he should have second base eligibility coming into next year, and second base being so bad. And Marte, if you actually go look at the hardest hit balls of the year, like overall, or sorry, the max exit velocity, because remember, who put out that awesome article about how max exit velocity is a really good indicator of power? I forgot who did that. Was it Dan Richards? I feel like it was a Dan Richards article.
Dan Richards does a lot of that. Dolph does a lot of that. Lundgren himself, Alex Chamberlain, and Max Fries. Like those three guys, I know there's more. Those three guys focus on that power contact quite a bit, and it was probably one of those three.
Yeah, so I remember somebody putting out something about that, and I remember reading something about it. And if you look at Ketel Marte, he had the seventh hardest hit ball of 2020. Mm-hmm. It was a ground ball, but it was the seventh hardest hit ball. But my point is that power's still there. I think he was playing through injury. We saw him put up a good average, only like one or two home runs with one stolen base. But I think over a full season, I still think he's a 25 home run guy, not the 30 something we saw in 2019. But I still think he has that 25 home run plus power. And I still think he has about that 10 stolen base floor. And I look, but the batting average is there. And you can get him in the fifth round, sixth round in these 15 teamers. I think he's solid value. And he'll probably move back to the outfield next year. So he might get that dual eligibility. But even if he doesn't, second base is so bad that Marte is a really good value now. Like, I'm all in on Marte at his current value. You'll probably see him move up a little bit, though, as we get into February, March area.
Yeah, because I know you've done a lot of your rankings already. Because I know when guys are doing rankings, because I do the same thing, you start tweeting the position a lot. Like, you were tweeting out about Albies. So I know you were doing second base the other day.
It wasn't. It just happened to work out that way. I really wasn't. Wow.
Impressive. No,
what I do is I start looking at random players, and then I go down the rabbit hole.
You go down the rabbit hole of who compares to them at the position.
And that's why I was like, Hira's really bad. Cronenworth was really good. I wanted to test recency bias, and I was very surprised. But the crazy part was I had some really smart people backing me on my Cronenworth take, because Hira looked – it's one of those things that I will adjust. But I am so out on Hira because of how bad – his plate discipline was terrible, and pitchers seemed to really exploit him. And people look at 2019 and look at the bottom line, but if you look at the behind the scenes, there was a lot there suggesting regression already. And all pitchers did was adjust. Now, Hira's a great prospect, a great talent, but he's still striking out 30% of the time for two straight seasons now, like it or not. And that type of profile lends itself to really, really bad batting average. And yeah, the power's there, but the speed isn't even there. And people were like, well, he steals. And I can't remember the numbers off the top of my head, because again, I can go search them, but I do know his success rate. Going back in 2019 was the only time he had like a decent success rate. Otherwise, it's been like 15-60%. So how many do they give him a yellow light? Do they give him a red light now in the base pass if he doesn't get better at running? Because
the one thing I want to look into more, again, this is where I'm going to say it so many times. I know I'm not the only one. This is where not having like beat writers there doing things really hurts. But that Brewers team offensively was so bad this year.
I know.
I really wonder, like, were they not running because they just didn't have the chance to keep guys on base to score runs? Like, there's so many things, because Council likes to run, so that's usually one thing to look at. But this year, like, they just didn't run. They didn't have a big roster that runs compared to the past. It's just a weird dynamic. That team was so bad offensively. I wonder what that effect that had on him.
But they also don't pay. So are they really going to bring in any good players to surround Yelich and Hira again?
True.
Like, I would love to see them compete, because they have Hira, they have Yelich, they have some pieces, they have Woodruff, Burns, which I'm – they have good parts, but I feel like they're gonna be, I feel like they're gonna sell before they buy, which is aggravating because they were competitive and now they're kind of
and they just paid Yelich. So yeah, it's like, oh crap.
They're probably, I bet you they sell them off. I guarantee you they sell them off.
They're gonna have to. Eventually they'll have to. But where I was going with that, so you had Cronenworth, who here is average ADP is around 70 right now. Cronenworth hasn't been picked yet. Most leagues haven't gone past 100 or so. Some leagues have got like 118, but Cronenworth is still on the board in every mock draft right now. So you're going to get a heck of a deal as it is as we stand.
I'm happy
if you believe in that. But my question for you is a name that we've seen talked about a lot. I know you've talked about him a bit. Basically, he almost went undrafted in a lot of leagues last year. His ADP is 58 right now. His name's Brandon Lau. Like, are you a Lau over Cronenworth guy? Do you think Lau is worth his price? Like, are you good with Lau by the end of round four in a 15-team league?
I'm having a hard time taking him there, but I think a lot of it's because I had so much exposure to him last year at such a different price. You know what I mean? Like, it's one of those, like, Ketel Marte, I had to warm up to him being a second, third-round pick. Well, like a third or fourth-round pick last year. And that's where I'm having a hard time truly, like, embracing the ADP of Brandon Lau. But, dude, everything about it just seems, like, really – realistic. We saw him have the, and problem was his big question mark was lefties and how the Rays would treat him against the lefties. And if you go look at his splits, he vastly improved. Yeah. That was another thing I put out there because people were like, well, it's a small sample. If you look at 2019 against lefties, he only had three home runs and what was it? Okay, it was 40 games, 66 at bats, three home runs, 242 batting average with, you know, other like a 50% K rate, I think it was. It was absurd, the strikeout rate. Again, there's another tweet I put out there because I found it very intriguing. I like to try to reference my tweets, but I can't find it. But against versus lefties, a 52.9% strikeout rate in 2019. So fast forward to 2020, which we're going to do on the fly here because that's what I like to do here, obviously, apparently. Which I shouldn't tell my secrets. I'm obviously doing this while we're talking, though. 50 at-bats, so similar, 60 play appearances, very similar numbers as far in terms of sample sizes because I think the other one was like 64. This is like 60. He had six home runs, hit for 300 batting average against, a 206 WRC plus, which is absurd, but only a 23.3% strikeout rate. So he dropped that strikeout rate against lefties 30%. I don't think he's this good against lefties, but he wasn't that bad is my point. So I think there's a happy middle. But you're looking at a guy who gives you plus power, some speed contributions as well. Again, back to that bad position. And, I mean, the batting average – 260, 269, 270 last 2 years. I think that's pretty realistic. I think that's okay. I don't know though. Fourth round and I have a hard time.
Here's my question for you then. It's the yes or no answers here. You have Brandon Lau at 58, and these are second basemen going after him. Gleyber Torres at 64.
No.
Brandon Lau at 58. Kevin Biggio at 65.
No.
Close. That's close. I like Biggio a lot, but that's close. Brandon Lau at 58. Ketel Marte at 75.
Ketel Marte. You found a weakness.
here's another one. If eligibility stands correct, Lau at 58, and this is a guy that's dropping way too much, and it's going to come back up eventually. This guy somehow has second base and third base eligibility on this. Yoan Moncada.
I think Moncada's third base only. I remember looking up his game logs.
I was shocked to see second base.
So he's going to be second base. Oh, and Gleyber Torres. I'm glad you brought him up. He's not second base eligible either.
So this is all kind of for nothing then.
I just thought about that. Yeah, because I looked him up. I looked him up the other day. I was like, because someone brought it up. I'm like, no. Losing second base. Now, look at Torres as a shortstop only. He loses a ton of value.
Insane amount of value. At the depth of that position, that's big.
He's going to be barely a top 10 shortstop.
Yeah, well, I didn't have him ranked as a top 10 shortstop before this season. So.
Neither did I.
So at least people will join the parade now. That'll be good.
I think I know you and I were – I thought that was pretty – one of the few things that we agree on a lot, but that was one thing that maybe people give us a hard time about. But shortstop was just so good. You're going to have, like, I think Gleyber's going to be – he's going to fall quite a bit, rightfully so. He doesn't offer speed, and if he's not second base eligible, that's bad.
So last one I'll do here is you have Lau at 58 at pick 99, Jeff McNeil.
I know it's not a popular thing to say around people these days, but I'm not a McNeil guy. I'm actually going to take – I'm okay with Lau at 58 compared to McNeil because I can wait even longer and get Cronenworth, who has multi-positional eligibility and a similar skill set with better steals but less power.
All right. Well, I'm going to wrap up our two early mocks talk now because we could literally go on this thing for a long, long time, just kind of going on this, and I want people to check it out. And I'm just going to keep using this as a conversation point for a while because they're going to keep changing and getting more information. But the last thing I'm going to mention, and it'll kind of lead into our next part here, is if you don't take pitching early in round three, late round three, into round four, Woodruff, Glasnow, Lynn, Gallen, Maeda, Snell, Lamet, Fried, Gray all go. And if you wait until, say, round six-ish, Hendricks, Sixto, Carrasco, Greinke, Plesac, Wheeler, Strasburg. So you have options, is what I'm trying to say, if you don't go early. And Burns is in there, too. I forgot. But what I want to get to you on is you had a interesting starting pitching poll because there's lots of ways to dissect this, obviously. And you basically said, who would you rather have? Cookie Carrasco, Jesús Luzardo, McCullers, or Berríos? As like, who would you draft out of these four? And like I said, you have Carrasco at pick 75. You have Sixto at pick 74. He goes going like one pick ahead of Carrasco. Mm-hmm. But you have Luzardo. Where did he go? Oh, he's going around pick 86. McCullers is really dropping off. My Atlanta. He's at pick 99. And then you mentioned Berríos earlier. He's at pick 93. So Carrasco, Luzardo, McCullers, Berríos. McCullers and Berríos getting quite a bit of a deal there, it looks like. What was your logic behind this this tweet?
I just see a whole bunch of I don't know. I really was curious because I didn't know which way to go. I really wanted to gauge the general consensus because there's just – it's so hard to judge pitching off such a short season. I think it's harder to judge pitching than it is hitting. I think hitting, you can find a little more of what to believe, what not to believe, whereas you're not finding that in – necessarily finding, like, I don't know, with pitching, there's so much volatility. Start to start, like, the colors throws a new pitch, whatever, and then this guy's doing good. Is it a hot streak? Is it who they are? So I wanted to see, I'm like, I don't know. I'm like, do we go upside over proven talent? Are we concerned about health with certain players? So that's kind of what the idea was behind the tweet, was just to gauge some general feedback, and it got quite a bit.
Who was your choice out of the four?
I think it was Carrasco, and then the more I look into it, it's like, well, Carrasco had some like things that I'm kind of concerned about. Not only is he getting older, but he also – I have my notes right here. His strain rate was higher than, you know, league average and his own personal like typical strain rate. All the ERA indicators suggest he was a little worse than he should have been. And what scares me is like, yeah, he had a career – like not career best. He had a bounce back K-minus walk rate, but that came with a career walk rate, like the walk rate being really high, like spiking compared to his usual self. And an O-swing rate that drops, so he wasn't getting as much chases. So you pair the two together, it makes sense. If you're not getting people chased on your pitches, you're going to walk more. So does he bounce back? How much did he benefit? Because if you go look at his start-by-start game log, you can see that he had, like, I don't know, like really good starts against the obviously bad teams, and then some struggles against, like, the Cubs and other teams that were a little better on offense. So how much of that plays into it? And I'm just, I don't know. Like, I'm having a hard time, honestly, ranking those middling, like, that next tier of pitching after the top, like, 15 to 20. And that's what, again, that's what all this is. I'm picking Carrasco based on track record, and we know what he can do. But I don't know. There's more upside elsewhere. Like, so it's like, it's really, it depends. Do you want upside or do you want steady production?
Yeah, the glob, as Spore and Mason called it last year, is legit. It's a, that's why I try to list it off, what you can find, basically. You know, round four to like round eight. It's just a ridiculous amount of guys you can see popping off. But like for me, Carrasco, I love. I just saw some hiccups this year that make me wonder if things are coming to an end because he's older than people think. Like, I'm not saying he's done, but I'm curious to see how much more dominance he has in him. Luzardo, I love, but like I said earlier, Luzardo's, Burns of the world, they're the ones I'm worried about innings more than anything. So I'm kind of curious there. So leading me with McCullers and Berríos. Berríos is as steady Eddie as they come. He's got a 200-inning floor. I guess what he does. He just doesn't strike out a lot of guys. So there's that. I liked McCullers for the fact that we saw him get going in the second half of the season, you know, coming off of TJ, getting worked in. Once he kind of got the reins off of him, he started to really get it going his last four or five starts. I saw a lot to like there. He's a guy that's not going to have, you know, at least give you 150 innings, and in round seven or so, that's not bad at all. If he's your SP3 with ace-like upside, I went with McCullers there. But it's a very interesting debate because I'm pretty sure, last I checked, Luzardo took that one down because everyone loves the Jesus Lizard. So it's going to be very interesting there.
Yeah, I think he did win. But it was pretty much – I think it was like a heavy Jesus Luzardo or Cookie conversation. And I thought I found it very interesting that McCullers got so little respect, to be honest. I thought it was going to be closer. So McCullers is becoming a value again because he felt in my draft, it's like pick 100 or whatever again. So,
yeah, no, I was very surprised at that as well. So will be something fun to monitor, but we have a long ways to go in that and then see where the rest of these mocks go. And then in December, we'll have, you know, NFBC DCs will start going and we'll get those ADPs. And then God knows what else we'll get ourselves into because it'll be so much more fun to go out there. But let's do a couple listener questions. We have Mr. Simeone, SP streamer himself, good buddy of yours from this Beer and Bourbon podcast that you guys do. He asks, who is your SP4? So there must be something behind that to just throw out the term SP4, Mike. Or is he talking about, okay, after the big three is probably what he's talking about. Now yeah. It makes sense. Just dawned on me. That's why we do this. So after DeGrom, Cole, Bieber, whatever order there we talked about, who's your SP4?
It's really pick your poison. How much of Giolito, like, we know he has ace upside. I love Giolito, but Bauer really looked to turn it on. But I think what it is, it's like a ex-girlfriend that hurt you, but you're taking her back. That's how Bauer is to me. Because I was big on Bauer the year he broke out. Like, yeah. I was huge on Bauer. And then he just hurt me. Can I just defer to you? Because I'm so torn. It'll probably change. I'll go Giolito for now, just because I'm such a Giolito guy. But Darvish is very intriguing, and Bauer, I think it's those three. That's why they're all back-to-back-to-back in the ADP right now.
Yeah, Darvish is my guy. I was all over him this year. Like you said, these guys are all fine. If Bauer gets his little deal he wants, he's going to skyrocket above the other three. Yeah. And now you have a new – now we're talking SP5 here. But Darvish is my guy just because of the consistency factor. That's what I want. We saw it in the second half. It was one of those things where he admitted – He made a change and he figured it out. And sometimes it's as simple as that. Nick Pollock and these guys, they talk about it all the time and they know pitching better than pretty much anyone. And it was that simple for him. And the question this year was, could he duplicate it? And he did. He looks filthy and he added pitches. Like, he has like 9 pitches now. It's asinine what he's doing out there. And I don't see it changing much for him because this is the guy that came from Japan. The reason why the Rangers spent all that money, you're seeing it here. He's a pitcher, not a thrower. And that's dangerous. And that can have a lot of success because, yes, he won't play every game in the Central, but he'll still play a lot. So I'll take Darvish with my caveat that I will mention is if we find out in spring training that Walker Buehler is going for 170-plus innings, he's my number four.
Yes, but we're talking in October right now. So yes,
that's why I said I'm just putting a caveat out there because people like to – you know how Twitter and stuff works.
Dude, I got added. It happened. Someone wrote old takes exposed on one of my things, and I forgot what it was. I think it was about me just saying the season won't make it because I was like, dude, I wasn't rooting against it. I just actively didn't believe especially once we were getting all those like Marlins and other teams just getting COVID, I was legitimately concerned. But you were the only person I know that was like from beginning, we're going to have a season of some sort. So I'll give you that. I was never rooting, but the thing is I was never actively rooting against the season. I just didn't believe we were going to make it through. Anyway.
We're rooting against it, but we don't need to go down that road anymore because I've had my – we can do that on a different show. Might have to get a Patreon for that. And then the other question we have, this is a good one, because I thought everyone knew this story, but David Mendelsohn of Triple Play Fantasy, who we've both been on that show, great, great group of guys over there.
Oh, yeah.
I put in the tweet today that I'm having Sleepy K Mike Kurland on the show. So David asked, why is Mike Sleepy K? Is it because he's tired? Is it because he likes sleeper players? The world needs to know. No, David, you need to know. So, Mike, the floor is yours to explain Sleepy K.
Okay, well, I am known for being goofy as it is. I'm known for many issues. My mic, I think my mic's been off this whole show, just so you know, just because I went to look and I'm like, it doesn't seem like it's connected. So you've been getting my audio from my webcam this whole time. Pretty sure I screwed that up too. I do a lot of funny things like that. And it's frustrating because my stuff is always set up. And then when I go to record, I don't know what happens. Anyway, so speaking of recording and not knowing what happens, I'm recording with one of my regular co-hosts, George Roto Nino, people might know him as. And him and I, it's back when I was like hustling hard. It was like 1:30 in the morning because he's West Coast like you are. So I always do later pods for him. Help, you know, so we get together. And I'm a late night guy. Well, it was like 1 in the morning and we were talking about J.P. Crawford. It was a shortstop. We were talking about very deep shortstops at this point in the offseason. Well, one thing led to another. He's talking about J.P. Crawford and I laid back. I used to do my – oh, that's another thing. I should probably set the scene that people don't realize. I didn't always have this setup. I didn't have the mic in front of me, my computer. I used to use a foldable desk and podcast on my couch. Dangerous. Don't do that because
that'll lead to the end of this story real quickly.
So basically, so just to kind of get there at this point, one thing led to another. I'm on my couch. It's 1 a.m. We're talking to JB Crawford. I lean back for just a minute, close my eyes, do one of those eye rubs. He's done talking to JB Crawford, and it was quiet. And I guess I fell asleep while podcasting. And it's like people are like, how did you do that? I'm like, dude, if it was with like a guest like you, Bubba, or like, you know, somebody that wasn't one of my regular guys, probably wouldn't have happened. And we didn't have video back then either. It was Zoom before we did these video podcasts.
That makes it way different. I'll be honest. If you don't have people having to watch you, I used to have a lot where I'd be like,
yeah,
in a big way.
And do that on a couch where you can lay your head back, game over. And that's what happened. I fell asleep and like 20 or 30, like maybe 20 seconds went by. And I guess I wasn't in a deep sleep because I was listening to, and I realized it was quiet. And the actually being quiet woke me up. And I was like, hello? He's like, hey, you still there? I'm like, yeah, dude, sorry, I fell asleep. And that was like, and I have the audio somewhere. But the thing is, though, people are like, oh, release the audio. I'm like, it really wasn't that good. The story, the fact that I fell asleep during a podcast is way funnier, but the audio didn't live up to it. It was like one of those, let's just leave it as I fell asleep podcasting. People seem to love it. And it happened because there's really no excuse, but I like my excuse is that I was super, it's like, you know, you have your, like you and Toby, you know, you guys podcast before you went to video. If you guys had any screw ups or anything, it's different. There's a level of comfort there that you just have with him versus other guests. Yep. And George is that guy with me. George is just a guy that, you know, I've been doing this with him since the beginning, part of the podcast. And I just got too comfortable. And I took a nap. I sleep a lot too. I took a nap before the podcast today. I mean, Sleepy K is great. And then, of course, the way I got it was this happened while I was drafting with Prospect Jesus. Why am I? Ralph
Lifshitz.
And he loves his 90s rap names. Apparently, he loves 90s rap. And he's like, he came up with Sleepy K in a group chat. And then John, MLB Moving Averages, tweeted out or texted me. I might still have it. He made a special K cereal box, say Sleepy K on it. And and so I ran with it. I was like, dude, that's like, I've been called so much worse in my life.
Oh yeah.
And to honestly get a nickname. So I embraced it. I bought a jersey this year, got the nickname Sleepy K on it. And I was like, awesome. I'm just embracing it. I've considered doing the Twitter handle, but because it's kind of like people know my Twitter handle now, I'm not a big name by any means, but I'm growing my, you know, my presence. So I'm in that weird, like, if I don't do it now, I got to either commit to just my name or use my nickname. And I don't know, because CPK is a really good nickname for fantasy baseball. It really is. Like, there's so many ways to play off of it, mostly in the sleeper aspect. But, yeah, that's it. It's not that great of a story, but I think it's funny that anybody who does this, and David will appreciate it as someone who podcasts, that I fell asleep podcasting. It's kind of hard to do, but I did it. I managed to.
It's impressive. It's very impressive. I've been tired many times. I never have. And what I pictured is I used to listen to a lot of Howard Stern back in the day before I was big into just listening to podcasts all day. Mm-hmm. And there's a clip of his producer, Gary Delabate. And there wasn't video back then, but there was audio, of course. And, you know, they had the producer in the back little room where he could see everything. And all of a sudden you can just hear snoring because his head's on his desk and he's snoring into the mic. And I'm picturing Mike just kind of leaning on his desk, out cold, until he told the story. But it was good.
Yeah,
that's good.
I wish I had the desk because honestly, I don't know if it would have happened. But then again, this chair, you're right. I'll be podcasting even with video. Well, that was another thing. I'll set it even better. I forgot. I was laying down. At one point, I got like this, like on the couch. I was on the couch, and I was like this with my like just resting on my belly. Just sitting here resting.
Yeah, that's a recipe for disaster.
Back. I can't hear you. My headset. But yeah, and so that was part of it too. I set myself up for failure, knowing good and well I was probably gonna fall asleep. I didn't care. I was like, I got this. One of those. Oh, it's like driving really tired. You know, you should pull over, but you don't. I was doing that, but the difference was I wasn't driving, so I actually fell asleep.
You couldn't roll the window down and crank the music up. It was a little, a little different.
And I wasn't gonna drink coffee at 1 a.m. because I actually wanted to sleep after the podcast.
Very true, but it's awesome. It's a good story. Good laughs. All the fun stuff there, but we'll wrap it up on this one. I always enjoy talking to you, Mike. We'll have to definitely do it again this offseason as we get ready to ramp up, because I know you're one of the hardest working dudes out there. You got a lot going on. So let everybody know what you're working on, where they can find you, if you want to give any secrets that you have working on, whatever you want, the floor is yours.
I have no idea what I'm supposed to say here because it's October, but follow me on Twitter at @Mike_Kurland. Bases Loaded Podcast is my podcast. I'm supposed to record tonight potentially, but weird. I guess some fun news for me is like I just got kind of pre-approved. I'm going to start looking at houses, so I'm actually going to be really busy with that.
Nice, really congratulations.
Yeah, thanks, man. I know it's like, again, I told you I know what to say here, so I guess I'll announce that. But I am going to be helping out with Mike Simeone, SP Schumer's draft kit this year. I kind of ran it. I did it last year real quick, like a quick write-up. But this year I'm doing a lot more in-depth analysis and writing up upwards of like probably close to 300 players, which is going to help me out tremendously. Because so I'm starting now. I've started the process now. Regardless, so look out for that. And, kind of just hanging out and maybe writing here and there and hopefully fixing all my technical issues because I seem to always screw something up.
And Mike has become one of the pretty awesome video guys out there. So just keep an eye on that.
Working on it. Thank you.
It's pretty sweet. He's self-taught, basically, and it's damn impressive. For a guy like myself that's very technologically challenged, to watch a guy like Mike teach himself basically how to do this is, to me, insanely impressive. So I enjoy watching those.
Well done. I appreciate that. And I do those little videos, but if you think, oh, I'm tech savvy, I can't get my damn microphone to work half the time. But I can do videos. So one thing at a time. I guess I have to walk. I'm running right now before I can walk. I got to learn to walk again.
Hey, it's all good. It's all good. But thanks for joining me today. And we'll definitely do it again, my friend.
Yeah, definitely, man. Thank you for having me.
No problem, everybody. Go check him out again on Twitter at @Mike_Kurland. I am at @BDentrick. If you give a rate and review on iTunes, I would much appreciate it. But until next time, Benched with Bubba, episode 314 in the books. Catch you guys later.
Hey, Drew Scott here.
And I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.